News Services Division of Akashwani presents Northeast Diary.
Good evening and welcome to another exciting edition of Northeast Diary. This program brings you closer to the heart of Northeast India. With fresh perspectives and captivating stories from this fascinating region, here is a sneak peek at what's lined up for you today. On January 14th, the sun moves from Sagittarius to Capricorn, heralding the start of Uttarayan. Uttarayan is marked by longer days and shorter nights, and its arrival is celebrated with the festival of Makar Sankranti. This festival symbolizes the sun's shift into Capricorn, and Makar refers to this zodiac sign, while Sankranti signifies transition. During this period, the sun's rays are said to carry immense positive energy, making it an auspicious time for new beginnings, spiritual endeavors, and important tasks. It also signifies the end of the harvest season and the commencement of a fresh agricultural cycle. In today's episode, we will take you through the Makar Sankranti celebrations in Arunachal Pradesh and Tripura. We will also explore Sokorone festival of the Chakeshang tribe in Nagaland. And in our segment, Enchanting Folktales of Northeast India, we delve into the captivating world of Northeastern folklore, unearthing tales that have been passed down through generations, revealing the magic and wonder of Northeast India's storytelling tradition. But first, let's head over to Arunachal Pradesh, where the Parshuram Kund Mela was held on the occasion of Makar Sankranti. Parshuram Kund is a Hindu pilgrimage center at the Mishimi Plateau in the lower reach of Lohit River in Lohit district. Let's tune in to our correspondent Rakesh Dole from Itanagar, who brings us the vibrant flavors of the Mela.
In Arunachal Pradesh, the 5-day Parshuram Kund Mela 2025, which started on January 12 this month, concluded today. The fair is held on the occasion of Makar Sankranti every year. It is a famous holy place of worship, which is steeped by Hinduism and is much venerated by them. It falls within the Kamlang Reserve Forest and is surrounded by dense forest in Lohit district of Arunachal Pradesh. According to Hindu faith, the sage Parshuram, on the advice of some sages, is said to have wandered all over the Himalayan range to atone for the sin of matricide initiated by his father. The axe that was stuck on his hand fell away, cleaving the mountain that sprang the Brahmakund. During the Mela, pilgrims and common visitors from all over the country and other countries too visit the place for sightseeing and to get a dip at the holy Brahmakund. Arunachal Pradesh Deputy Chief Minister Chawna Main, while inaugurating the fair, said that an estimated 150 crore rupees will be invested in the overall development of the Parshuram Kund area, aiming to improve facility for visitors and preserve the sanctity of the site. AJ Lungfi, Mela coordinator, informed that extensive arrangements had been made to ensure the safety and comfort of the pilgrims, including clearly marked pilgrims' routes, well-maintained betting ghats, and heightened security measures. Like previous years, this year also, thousands of devotees attended the fair and took a holy dip at the Parshuram Kund. For Northeast Diary, this is Rakesh Dole, Akashwani News, Itanagar. From Arunachal Pradesh, let's now travel to Tripura, where the 3-day Tirthmukh Poush Mela, also known as Poush Sankranti Mela, wrapped up on January 15th. This unique festival celebrated on the banks of the Gomati River is a fusion of religion, faith and tradition.
Our correspondents Kunal Shinde and Shamal Deb bring us the details, along with a special focus on the enhanced security measures provided by the Border Security Force due to its proximity to the border.
The Tirthamukh Mela, which has a rich religious and cultural heritage, culminated on the banks of River Gomti in the Gomati district of Tripura. The Mela is a sight to behold as tens and thousands from across Tripura converge at Tirthamukh to take a holy dip in River Gomati. The Mela, which began on January 13 on the occasion of auspicious Posh Purnima, coincided with the Mahakumbh Mela that is underway at Prayagraj in Uttar Pradesh. Tirthamukh, nestled around serene hills and terrains, is seated on the lap of nature from where River Gomti originates. Tirthamukh, one of the important holy Hindu religious sites, also witnesses people belonging to the Hindu from both Bengali and indigenous communities who come together to take holy bath on the wee hours of Makar Sankranti, marking the commencement of the sun's northern course. With the current situation in neighboring Bangladesh, the Border Security Force had beefed up its vigil in the border areas closer to Tirthamukh. As part of its patrolling mechanism, the BSF troops combining both male and female personnel resorted to boat patrolling in the Vaz Dambur Lake. Also, the BSF jawans were seen maintaining highest vigil alongside the iron-fenced area on the international border on foot, accompanied by sniffer dog, motorbike and vehicle. Talking exclusively to Akashwani News, Deputy Inspector General, Sector Headquarters, BSF, Udaipur, Mr. Anil Sharma said the force maintained extra vigil for the Tirthamukh Mela near the international border.
यहाँ पे जो हमारे ये लोग हैं जो सीमा पे हैं या हमारी स्टेट के हैं यहाँ पे त्रिपुरा स्टेट में रह रहे हैं ये इस पर्व पर गोमती जहाँ पे गोमती नदी का संगम है वहाँ पे आके अपना स्नान करते हैं और अपने जो पूर्वजों को श्रद्धांजलि देते हैं और ये संगम बॉर्डर से काफ़ी नज़दीक है बॉर्डर के नज़दीक होने से हमारा दायित्व और बढ़ जाता है क्योंकि बॉर्डर पे काउंटर पार्ट भी है काउंटर पार्ट से अनहोनी करने की कोशिश करें तो इसलिए हमने इसके लिए बहुत अलर्ट कर रखा है इसमें हमने अलग अलग मोबाइल पेट्रोलिंग बढ़ा रखी है नॉर्मल पेट्रोलिंग को बढ़ा दिया है एरिया को 24/7 गार्ड कर रहे हैं जिससे कोई भी एंटी सोशल एलिमेंट इसमें आके कोई अनहोनी या अप्रिय घटना ना हो पाए साथ में इसमें हम जो पीछे डमूर लेक है उसमें भी अपनी निगरानी करने के लिए बोट्स का इस्तेमाल कर रहे हैं और इवन सर्विलेंस कैमरा का भी इस्तेमाल कर रहे हैं और इवन हमने अपने किस दूसरे एरिया से ड्रोन को भी उस एरिया में भेजा है ताकि ऊपर से भी वो निगरानी रखे जो ट्रैफिक है उसको स्मूथ रखने के लिए कि कोई ज़्यादा भीड़ भाड़ ना हो उसके लिए हमने छोटे छोटे ग्रुप बनाए हैं जो कि ट्रैफिक को कंटिन्यूसली मूव करते रहते हैं बड़ी संख्या में लोग इस मेले में आते हैं तो इसके लिए थोड़ा सा कि सही तरीके से मेला हो सके इसके लिए हमने थोड़ा सतर्कता बढ़ा रखी है
द सिंसियर एफर्ट्स ऑफ द बीएसएफ टू फैसिलिटेट स्मूथ कल्मिनेशन ऑफ द मेला बाय गिविंग टॉपमोस्ट प्रायोरिटी टू द सेफ्टी ऑफ पिलग्रिम्स बाय टेकिंग वेरियस स्टेक होल्डर्स ऑन बोर्ड इज अ प्रेज़वर्दी स्टेप एंड एग्जेम्प्लीफाइज द ग्रेट सोशल रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी ऑफ द पैरामिलिट्री फोर्स Kunal Shinde for North East Diary from Akashwani News, Agartala.
Now let's head to Nagaland, a state that never lacks for vibrant festivals. Today we explore the Sokrone festival of the Chakesang tribe, an occasion that celebrates the agricultural cycle and deep cultural heritage. Mary, our Kohima correspondent, brings us insight into this fascinating festival.
In Nagaland, each tribe celebrates its own festivals, each signifying unique aspects of their rich culture and traditions. Today, we bring you a glimpse of the Chakesang Naga tribe and their celebration of Sekrinye Festival. The Sekrinye Festival is a time of gratitude, highlighting the tribe's spiritual beliefs and strong community bonds that hold the tribe together. Let's get to know more on the significance of the Sekrinye Festival.
Sukrunye is the premier festival of the Chakasan tribe in Nagaland. The festival is considered a time of purification and sanctification, where blessings are invoked upon boys and girls. It is a celebration of life through singing, dancing, wrestling, and merrymaking among families and communities. Traditionally, Sukrunye is a 10-day festival. The festivity period is preceded by a day known as Tisa. On this day, animals are slaughtered and preparations for the rest of the festivals are made. This is followed by Jedu, where the main activities of the festival commences, with each day holding its unique significances throughout the period. The most important part of the festival is the purification rituals and the add of blessings upon boys called Sukru on the third day of the festival. At dawn, most of the male folk gather at the village commonwealth to bathe. This act symbolizes seeking blessings from God Almighty, confessing sins to the Creator, and washing away the infirmities. Fathers also play a significant role in this ritual. They bind their sons' hands and legs with a leaf while invoking blessings. With the advent of Christianity, many of the Sukrunye's traditional ceremonies and rituals are no longer practiced in most villages as they once were. It has largely evolved into a one-day affair. Nevertheless, Sukrunye continues to hold great significance and is celebrated with enthusiasm. During this traditional festival, indigenous games, folk songs, folk dances, and sports are enjoyed, blending the cultural spirit with Christian values.
From the Grand Hornbill Festival to the vibrant celebrations of each tribe, Nagaland is a treasure trove of cultural diversity. These festivals beautifully showcase the best of the tribe, from traditional dances to intricate handicrafts and delicious cuisines, offering a fascinating glimpse into the cultural richness of this incredible land. For Northeast Diary, this is Mary, Akashvani News, Kohima.
Meghalaya recently hosted its first ever cabinet retreat at the picturesque Sohra, where the state's leaders mapped out a vision for the state's growth as it approaches its 60th anniversary in 2032. The retreat, chaired by Chief Minister Conrad K. Sangma, saw discussions around the state's future development. Here is a report.
A significant two-day cabinet retreat led by Meghalaya Chief Minister Conrad K. Sangma came to a close on January 11 at the picturesque Sohra. The event, which brought together cabinet ministers, senior government officials and deputy commissioners, is set to become an annual occurrence. The retreat focused on creating a comprehensive roadmap for the state's growth under the initiative Vision 2032. It provided a valuable platform for all departments to collaborate and address key challenges, particularly in social and infrastructure development, with an emphasis on education and healthcare. Throughout the retreat, various sessions were held. These discussions were centered on finding actionable solutions to foster growth and development across the state. The Chief Minister emphasized that the retreat's outcomes would lead to targeted, results-oriented interventions aimed at positioning Meghalaya among the top 10 states in the country.
The idea is to share the overall larger vision of the government, as well as the specific targets and goals of the specific departments with other departments and all the officials and cabinet ministers. 2032 is when the state will be celebrating 60 years. And therefore, we felt that the 60 years is an important milestone, and it goes with the thought process that we'll be able to really align our vision with that. So therefore, we have made the growth projections and trajectory based on the numbers that we have calculated, and we have aligned it with the 60 years of our statehood, and that is 2032.
Clear performance indicators were established, and the Chief Minister urged departments to adopt a collaborative, time-bound approach to ensure the successful execution of programs and projects.
Presentations are made by departments on what is the mandate that they have been given, what have they done about achieving those mandates, where are the challenges that are there ahead of them, and how do they plan to overcome those challenges, and what is their goal in the next 1 year, 3 years, and 5 years.
Chief Minister Sangma expressed satisfaction with the retreat, calling it both insightful and productive for the government. He underscored the need for setting clear, achievable goals and conducting regular follow-ups to track progress. Additionally, he encouraged both officers and ministers to strengthen government-community relationships through frequent field visits.
It is very crucial that these related departments and other departments understand the problems, understand the vision, the goals and the targets that each of these departments have, so that they are able to collaborate and work with each other and understand the larger mandate that is there in front of us.
This retreat marks a crucial step towards enhancing coordination and communication among various departments, ensuring the overall growth and development of Meghalaya. This is Kiji Chapula with Lamprang Nongspung reporting for Northeast Diary from Akashwani News, Shillong.
Enchanting folktales of Northeast India. Today, we bring you to immerse yourself in a captivating Thai Kamthi folktale titled Nang Chanta Looks for a Groom, narrated by senior broadcaster Kaushik Roy.
In the good old days when the Nangchaos were engaged in battle, there lived a willful princess whose name was Nang Chanta. When it was deemed that she was of marriageable age, her parents arranged an extravagant event whereby 150 eligible princes were invited to compete for her hand. The assembled princes put their talents on display for the benefit of the princess, but she was hard to impress. Would it not be better if I were to throw my stole in the air and marry the man on whose roof it falls? She sighed. Who knows? I may find the perfect match for myself that way. The more she thought about it, the more convinced she became that it was the only way to find true love. She conveyed her feelings to her shocked parents. The king flew into a purple rage. "Have you taken leave of your senses? Are these brave men not good enough for you?" he demanded to know. The king even threatened to disown her, but it seemed to have no effect on the girl whatsoever. Word spread across the kingdom that the princess had rejected all her royal suitors and was now on the lookout for a suitable groom. People flocked to get a glimpse of the princess as she stepped out of the palace gates. Who was this princess who defied her parents to look for a husband on the streets? Only a mad person would do so. Nang Chanta's search took her through rows and rows of mansions belonging to merchants, noblemen, and ministers. Every now and then, she stopped to throw her gold-trimmed stole in the air, and each time she did that, many hearts skipped a beat. Each house owner, young or old, wished with all his heart that the stole would rest on the roof of his home. But the stole floated tantalizingly by and landed on the ground near the feet of the princess each time. Finally, when the princess was about to give up hope of ever finding a husband, a strong gust of wind blew and carried the stole away. It sailed through the air and disappeared from view. The princess followed the direction the stole had taken and soon enough spotted a gold-trimmed stole reflecting the light of the sun. It lay on the roof of a hut that belonged to a poor woodcutter who was away at work. Since there was no one to answer the door, she paced up and down in front of the hut, waiting for the owner of the house to return. Was he young or old? What if he were ugly? What if he already had a wife? She mused. It was late evening when the woodcutter returned home, tired and hungry. He had been able to sell some firewood and was carrying a little sack of grain. Standing by his humble hut was a girl so beautiful and richly attired, he wondered if she were a fairy and stopped in his tracks. He was half afraid to move forward, wondering if he had come to the wrong house. "Who are you? Where have you come from?" he stuttered. Nang Chanta's dreams were shattered when she saw a short, stout man with peasant looks in sweaty, soiled and tattered clothes. This was not what she had bargained for. But for the headstrong princess, anything was better than having to admit she was wrong. "My name is Nang Chanta," she said. "I am the daughter of the king, and now I have chosen to live here." There was a look of utter surprise on the woodcutter's face. "How can that be? Please go away before the king sends his soldiers after me," he pleaded with folded hands. "I have left the palace on my own accord, and my father will not come to look for me. This is my home now. I cannot leave," the princess replied. She then explained how she had thrown the stone and how it had landed on his roof, making him the chosen one. "But I cannot afford to feed you, nor can I clothe you in fine silk, least of all provide you with the comforts you are used to," the woodcutter told her. No matter how much the woodcutter tried, he was unable to make Nang Chanta alter her decision. The poor man ultimately gave up reasoning with her, and so they became man and wife. Nang Chanta now had to wake up early each morning, sweep the mud floor, fetch water from the stream. Since her husband did not even own a water pot, she had to use bamboo to fetch and store water. All the drudgery was beginning to take its toll on her. Soon her beautiful garments became soiled and frayed. Her once soft hands became coarse and lined with cuts, the fingernails broken and filled with grime. The soles of her feet were lined with cracks, or for shoes wore out and had to be discarded. Her husband had not been able to sell much firewood because the villagers were poor and fetched their own supply of firewood. With no money coming in, their stock of grain was depleted, and they had to live on roots and wild ferns. After much contemplation, Nang Chanta removed the diamond ring from her finger and gave it to her husband. "Take this and sell it," he said. "Are you sure you want to part with this ring? It is the only piece of jewelry you have," her husband wanted to know. "Of what use is this piece of jewelry when we have nothing to eat?" she sighed, although it pained her to part with it, for it was a gift from her parents and the only thing she had that reminded her of them. The woodcutter took the ring and went to the village market. He showed it to the shopkeepers and traders, but no one seemed willing to buy it. They all knew it was worth a lot of money, although they did not know how much, and none of them had that kind of money. Unable to sell the ring, the woodcutter walked home dejected. "What sort of ring is this that no one wants? It must be worthless." He took the ring and flung it as far as he could into the river. When Nang Chanta heard of it, she almost fainted. "You are a fool to have thrown my expensive ring away," Nang Chanta began to sob. The woodcutter could not bear to see his wife unhappy. "There are plenty of such stones in the jungle where I go to cut wood. I can take you there and show them to you," he said. The princess looked disdainfully at her husband. "What do you know of precious stones? You just threw the most valuable thing we had. Well, I have a few of them here, the woodcutter said. He took out a small bundle hidden within the layers of the thatch and handed it to his wife. When she opened the bundle, she saw precious gems that were the size of eggs. These must be worth a fortune, she exclaimed. Show me the place at once. Perhaps we won't be poor any longer. Armed with huge baskets, the two of them hurried to the place where a sack full of diamonds, rubies, emeralds, and other precious stones lay half hidden inside the hollow of a tree. As they scooped out the gems, a gold ring with the royal seal on it caught Nang Chanta's attention. That ring belongs to my father, she cried. It was stolen a long time ago with his collection of gems. The thief must have hidden them here and somehow could not return to collect them. We will return this treasure to your father, the woodcutter said. They carried the jewels home and were so excited that they could not sleep at all. They set off for the palace early next morning. It had been a long time since Nang Chanta had left her home, and she was wondering how her parents would react when they saw her husband and her. She need not have worried for the king and the queen, as they were only too happy to have her back, and all was forgiven. As part of her dowry, the king presented them a beautiful palace, servants, and riches.
Northeast Diary program, broadcast every Thursday at 5:30 p.m., brings very interesting and enchanting stories from the 8 Indian states of Northeast India. Don't forget to tune in. And now, let's celebrate Assam's harvest festival, Magh Bihu, with a soulful Assamese song, Maghor Bihu Ahil, which marks the end of the harvest season.
Ah, oh, yeah. Homonia, oh homia de Christi, maghado kongali, oi bohagote dhemali koru.
And with that, folks, we come to the end of this edition of Northeast Diary. Join us again next week, same day, same time, for more stories from this enchanting part of India. Until then, goodbye.
This program was presented and produced by Vinita Thakur with assistance from Kumar Gaurav. It was brought to you by the New Services Division of Akashwani.